The Tom Woods Show, episode 945.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, everybody always thinks the current U.S. president must be the worst, but man, is there competition for that title. Check out our free course on the presidents and their crimes against liberty at freehistorycourse.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, talking about startup societies today with the co-founder and CEO of the Startup Societies Foundation, Joe McKinney. They are holding the Startup Societies Summit next month. That's August 2017 at City College in San Francisco. And we'll have the details at tomwoods.com/945. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
I'm curious about this topic of startup societies. In a way, it runs completely counter to every conservative instinct I have. And yet, on the other hand, I feel like, well, the old-timey societies ain't doing me any good, so I got to look for what might work. So first of all, what is it that all these different sorts of topics that are, as a matter of fact, going to be covered at your event in August, what do they have in common?
So a startup society is any form of new experimental government located in a small geographic area. So it isn't really tied to any sort of ideology, conservative or non-conservative, liberal or illiberal. Basically, the point is to have as much experimentation as possible, which is what small governments tend to lend to.
Okay, so maybe if you could give us an example. Just start with one example.
Perfect.
So that we can get a sense of what you're driving at.
So the most successful startup society in recent history was actually Shenzhen. After Mao Zedong's Cultural Revolution, people were starving. They were literally eating bark. And his successor, Deng Xiaoping, decided, well, we need to do something radical in order to, you know, stop the starvation. However, we don't want to upset the whole balance. So what he decided to do was to create little experiments in governments called special economic zones. And he placed them across China. And the first one was Shenzhen, which was located near Hong Kong. And it was a fishing village of about 30,000 people and now has a population of 18 million and has the same gross domestic product as like Portugal or Ireland or Vietnam. And it's done that within like a 30-year period. And now it's called the Hardware Silicon Valley. And now more than 40% of Chinese people live in special economic zones. So that's the most pertinent example, especially of startup societies today.
Well, as a matter of fact, within a few days, I'm having Joe Quirk on to talk about seasteading again because they have a book out. So I'll save seasteading for that time. But when you say that there's no ideology involved, I mean, my remark about conservatism is simply that a genuine conservative, not a Newt Gingrich conservative, but a genuine conservative would be of the opinion that, you know, look, where you live is where you grew up and you have roots and you build on those roots. And the idea of uprooting yourself and beginning a society from scratch on the basis of enlightenment rationalism would run completely contrary to that. But as I say, at the same time, given that every society I know of is pretty darn crummy, I'm more sympathetic to this sort of approach. But give me an example then. Are there examples of startup societies that aren't the brainchild of small government people?
That aren't the brainchild of small government people. Yes.
Yeah.
For instance, Lee Kuan Yew was basically the founder of modern-day Singapore. It declared independence from Britain and Malaysia around the 1960s. And while, you know, they tend to have a pretty free market, he was originally a communist. And he still has some non-free market principles and certainly some illiberal social policies. For instance, it's well known that they banned gum in Singapore. And they're pretty strict on, let's say, like homosexuality. But they are very small. They're a city-state, and they're very geared towards the market. And they basically started from scratch. Like a lot of these special economic zones, they were very, very poor. And now they're a first-world country, even though it's a tiny little city out in Southeast Asia.
But these so far sound like things that government officials start up somewhere. Mm-hmm. Is there any role for entrepreneurship then in this?
Of course. And actually, you're seeing a lot of private special economic zones around the world. The IMF has actually endorsed private special economic zones as a better alternative. When they study public versus private special economic zones, they find that private special economic zones actually perform better because they actually have less corruption.
All right. So describe then, treat me like I'm seven and describe what exactly a special economic zone consists of.
So generally, a special economic zone is when a host government grants a level of autonomy in terms of policy towards a small geographic area. So it's not fully sovereign. It's not a fully autonomous state, but it does have autonomy to determine its own policies.
What has been your opinion of Liberland, that tiny little country that got some interest among libertarians some time ago?
I'm really glad that people were excited about it, and I want to see something like that happen, but for a lot of reasons, I'm not very hopeful about Liberland.
Oh, okay. Well, what kind of a host would I be if I didn't push a little bit more? What's your skepticism?
Well, the biggest one is how belligerent they were to the neighboring governments, Serbia and Croatia. I even mentioned this in when I was interviewed by Reason. They came with both middle fingers up, and because of that, they made it especially hard to negotiate for a little bit of land. I know as libertarians, we often want to, you know, just be as anti-government as possible, but when it comes to adjudicating disputes among states and asserting sovereignty, you need to have some sort of relationship. And it's completely belligerent. And now Croatia is simply not letting people in. And because of the Jedlica left Liberland initially after declaring it his own, after it was a terra nullis, he no longer has as solid of a claim to it. And now no one's really willing to recognize him. So I'm not very hopeful about it.
Huh. Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to revisit that subject somewhere down the line. I'm looking through, you know, because I'm interested in the Startup Society Summit and in your organization. But what is an eco-village? That's one of the examples that's given.
So, like I said, we have multiple ideologies, and one of them could be environmentalism. An eco-village is when you're trying to live in congruence with nature. You tend to have all your resources in a loop, meaning that you don't spend more than you consume. You use, like for instance, like if you take all your trash, you usually use it for energy or you usually use it for plants. So you don't have any extra waste that you have like in a bin or something like that. It's usually also has more greenery. One of our speakers in our previous conference is Mark Fraser. He actually founded an organization that connects all eco-villages worldwide. And there's a couple hundred around. One of the most interesting examples is RenGen Villages. They had a TED Talk. They call themselves the Tesla of eco-villages, and they're forming one near Amsterdam. It's very interesting.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm looking at the lineup of people you have for your summit coming up next month. The dates, tell me the dates again. I'm looking at August 11th and 12th, 2017.
Correct.
City College in San Francisco. Startupsocieties.com is the website. And I'm looking at the speakers, and let's see. Dale Brown's been a guest on my show, as has Joe Quirk and as has Michael Strong. I'm familiar with some of the other people, but not all of them, which actually makes me happy. I would be sad if I knew all these people. I want this to be full of brand new people with brand new ideas. But I can't help noticing John McAfee is on here. He's a very, very controversial guy. I'm just curious how he fits into this particular theme and what he would talk about.
Well, I think one of the driving themes about our conference is that we're a new form of politics, that we're not the simple, you know, electoral way. And I think John McAfee's campaigns kind of illustrated that. He wasn't going to go the normal route at all. And a lot of Judd Weiss's videos that advertised his campaign when they were running together sort of illustrated that. And he's also an entrepreneur. It's very important to us that we are trying to create positive examples and actually build things rather than simply argue. And I think John McAfee embodies that. It's also nice to have a little controversy, to be honest.
Well, yeah, no kidding, no kidding. So tell me about exactly, given that I don't know a lot of these people, there must be some interesting stories behind these faces. So tell me some things that people coming to your conference are going to be hearing about.
Well, they're going to be hearing a lot about special economic zones, obviously. One of them is the leader of the president of a Alliance of Special Economic Zones in Latin America. So you're going to be hearing a lot of developments about these practices in Latin America. One of them, as you may know, is the Honduras Z projects, which are extraordinarily interesting. They're trying to make essentially private SEZs in South America and include a lot of blockchain infrastructure into it as well. And I think Latin America will be very, very interesting for that. We're also going to be invited some more tech-oriented people, like David Orban. He co-founded Network Societies, which is an organization that tries to include both decentralization and exponential technologies. Exponential technologies are technologies that grow so quickly that they'll radically change our world. Things like biomedical engineering or, let's say, AI tech, for instance, or blockchain. And we believe that, like a startup, every proper startup society must include elements of technology that can make it ultimately competitive. That's one of the reasons we have in San Francisco.
Ah, got it. Okay. And I also noticed John Chisholm. I've also had John Chisholm on my show. So good choices you have here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I noticed somebody from the Bitcoin Foundation is going to be there. How does Bitcoin fit into this story?
Well, I mean, Bitcoin is normally seen in the realm of financial decentralization. And we believe it's time that we really explicitly bring in the fold of political decentralization, especially when a lot of places, it's still in a gray zone where Bitcoin operates. So if we create these enclaves, these startup societies, where they have jurisdictions that make it easier for Bitcoin transactions to occur, it could really help mass adoption. So there's a lot of financial stake that Bitcoin players would have in startup societies. And ultimately, I would like to see startup societies run on the blockchain. So let me explain that a little bit. So right now there's this thing called ICOs, which is sort of like an IPO, except for you're offering a blockchain token to denote ownership of something. We want to have something like that for ownership in a city. We want people to be not just be able to own a city, own shares in a city, but be able to distribute that ownership on the blockchain. And I think a lot of blockchain people are going to be very interested in that, and we're going to be talking about it at our conference.
I can't help noticing, as I mentioned before, Dale Brown being on here. Now, he's known for providing security services in Detroit and, in a way, showing up the official security providers of the city because of his methods and his effectiveness. So he's not quite establishing a startup society, but he is showing that the conventional ways we think about the provision of a lot of services are much too narrow. Is that where you're going with that?
Well, actually, his speech is going to be about using his methods in startup societies.
Oh.
He wants to provide sort of protection for these special economic zones or startup societies across the world, even in the developing world. He wants to franchise this model around the world. He described it as like a defense Red Cross.
Wow. Okay. I'm glad to know that I knew that I had somebody who was ideologically sympathetic to me when I talked to him, but I didn't know. He struck me as a guy who's so busy that he's not really involved in this stuff. And now to see him front and center in this is very encouraging to me. All right. Tell me about, these people you're featuring are from organizations I've never heard of, and I'm pretty plugged in. So tell me about something called Operation Atlantis.
Absolutely. So it was one of the first studies that we did. We heard bits and pieces about this story, but there was no real comprehensive storyline of what it was. Ultimately, it was the first libertarian seasteading attempt. It was done in the 1960s by a man called Werner Stiefler. What he tried to do was he tried to create a community. He got a hotel and he got about a couple dozen people there, and he tried to make a community. They even had their own currency and they were developing their own laws. And they wanted to take that community and they wanted to put it on a concrete platform out in the Caribbean. They even were able to get Buckminster Fuller, the creator of the geodesic dome, to create the architecture of this thing. And they were able to go out there and they built their ship. However, they were beset by storms, and the government, the Haitian government, thought they were pirates and started shooting them up. So eventually their boat sunk, but no one really knew about it until very recently. And we actually were able to uncover the last existing pamphlet of Operation Atlantis to explain sort of the principles of this startup society. And it was basically fairly objectivist. It was like a year before they coined the term anarcho-capitalism. So it was all pretty much on Randian terms. And it was very interesting. And we were able to use that research and piece together everything else. And with Isabel Simpson, a PhD student who's actually going to be speaking at our conference, we were able to publish a peer-reviewed study about Operation Atlantis. And the real importance of it is to show that this stuff has been happening for a while and there's lots of lessons to be learned. One of the biggest reasons we started the Startup Societies Foundation is because there's a ton of these things out there, way more than even we know about. But they don't know about each other and they don't know about these examples, so they can't learn from them and they can't use a network to come together and help each other out. So the basis of our organization is to inform everyone within the network and outside of it, and as well as connect them together. If we do that, people will be more willing to participate in these experiments. And the more credible it seems, the more they will be created, the more examples that you will have, and then the more learning will happen, and then more will be created still.
Among the people who are going to be at your event, is there anybody other than Joe Quirk who envisions something that will require the negotiation of sovereign rights with existing powers? Or would these all just be subsets within existing sovereignties?
So wait, did you say outside of sovereignty?
Yeah, like for example, the Seasteading Institute. Seasteading would not be, it wouldn't be a project of the United States. It would be a thing, and then they would try to work out arrangements with local states. Whereas a special economic zone would be more along the lines of, we already have a state, and we're going to let you practice your experiment within the confines of our state.
Honestly, that's the most unfortunate thing about startup societies. There's no real way to completely get yourself out of the realm of negotiating for sovereignty, even in terra nullises like the ocean. You still have to negotiate with states. While technically it's completely open to everyone, if you're building a mini government near a existing sovereign government, they're not going to take too kindly to that. And like I
no,
said,
I get that. I guess my question is, Joe, though, at least conceptually, what he's doing is something that is independent of existing states, even if he may have to negotiate with them. I want to know, is there anybody else in your group who isn't just involved in a special economic zone, but is doing something a little more radical even than that?
Well, one of our speakers attempted to make his own seastead that wasn't related to any government at all. It was called Blue Seed. It was sort of a seastead minimally viable product. And what he would do is essentially just take a very, very large cruise ship, and he would take it outside Silicon Valley waters, into international waters, and he would give it to be a way to allow migrant workers to get a lower level visa that's much less costly and be able to work for Silicon Valley companies while at the same time, not incurring as much costs. But even then, there was still so many problems that were associated with adjudicating sovereignty. And even in the case of Joe Quirk, he's working at the French Polynesian government.
Yeah, I'm looking at Blue Seed right now. I mean, these all seem like interesting ideas, but they would require a huge amount of funding to get off the ground, for one thing. And
yes,
it's hard to know where that funding would come from.
Yeah, it's very hard. In the case of Max with Blue Seed, he had a particular problem because of investors. They like being able to invest in things that they can account for. They can look at past examples and they can model it. It's really hard to do that with a startup society normally. The closest example would be a special economic zone, but the Chinese are pretty tight-lipped when it comes to that information. But yes, it requires a lot of money. In fact, there was a recent city that was a series of man-made islands by China. They invested $100 billion in the creation of a single city near Singapore, and it's freaking people out. It requires a lot of infrastructure. It requires a lot of money to grease the wheels of existing governments, and obviously protection. A lot of these areas, they don't have adequate protection, and the governments that are normally tasked with that are totally incapable of it.
Now, I want you to, as we wrap up, I want you to, maybe by referring to a few people who are going to be at your event, however you want to do it, make the case that this is something vital and real and exciting and not just libertarian daydreaming, which is what a lot of people would think.
Quite the opposite. And in fact, this may upset some of your viewers. I'm not necessarily libertarian. I call myself an exitarian. I believe that there's a bigger movement that should be focused on making it easy to leave and allow every other form of government. If you lower the cost of exit, multiple things will happen that won't be of one ideological set. And this is important because for so long, libertarians and other ideologies have been focused purely on arguing their point. And while that works with a certain subset, some people like rational arguments, the majority of people are interested in examples. If they're themselves and their families and their communities do well, that's what they'll be attracted to. And that's how it's been done historically. In fact, I'm glad that the show has been done right after July 4th, because as of yesterday, 240 years ago, 13 startup societies declared independence. from their host government. And they became that and propelled the ideas of liberty and classical liberalism, not because of everyone there was really well-versed in John Locke and was willing to debate it. They were able to do so because they set up these societies and competed to the point of like, okay, we have to adopt these in order to be competitive. And then when people in Europe saw that they were rapidly expanding and improving their way of life, they're like, wow, I'm going to start moving there. It wasn't a sudden idea that classical liberalism was right. It's that if you allowed people to easily leave, this sort of competition will arrive at an optimal form of government. And that's why I want to say we need to stop arguing, because we're never going to come to a solution. We need to actually show real results. And the reason my co-founder and I started this, because we're done talking. We want to demonstrate our ideas through actions. And I think this conference is going to be the best way to do it. And if you guys are interested in actually making liberty happen, you need to come to San Francisco August 11th to the 12th, and you need to be part of the movement. You need to be part of the network. You need to be part of the next chapter in history. Ride the wave.
Excellent. Well, listen, I want to make sure people do that, do have a chance to check it out. So I'm going to link to the event, of course, on the show notes page, which is tomwoods.com/945. But they can also get there directly by going to your website, which is, once again,
startupsocieties.com.
There you go. Startupsocieties.com. Couldn't be simpler. All right. Well, now I feel like, after your event is over and I hear the reports about how it went, I'm looking at all these people. Of course, as a guy who releases 5 podcast episodes a week, I'm salivating thinking about all the potential guests I could get out of this thing. So I hope it is a smash success for you. I hope it does really well. And it is frankly, refreshing to hear something that isn't just the same old, well, what if we tried to get the tax rate cut by 12% sort of thing. You know, it is nice to hear something that's a little bit more fresh than that, and I'm glad you're doing it, and thanks for your time today.
Absolutely, Tom. Glad to be on.
All right, everybody. Before I let you go, I am still seeing crazy, ridiculous nonsense on Facebook about healthcare, and I mean, I'm sure some of your friends are saying hundreds of thousands of lives will be lost without Obamacare, or it's been saving 30, 40,000 lives a year. And you don't know what to do about this. I have an ebook on it, and it takes on that and anything else they might say about healthcare. It's all in there. All in there. And it's called Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Healthcare. And the beautiful part of it is you can get it by going to yourfriendsarewrong.com. Just think of the satisfaction you'll have typing in yourfriendsarewrong.com. You'll get that beautiful ebook. All right, Lou Rockwell comes back tomorrow. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.